live from the Shangri-La of South County.
Coming to you from Rust and Tustin, the state of disrepair.
In the morning, Nathan Penetration.
In the morning, Brian Blatt.
How do you like PUBG? Player Unknown Battlegrounds.
I like the concept a lot. I haven't played it in third person. I've only played it in first, but I like it in first.
That was like your first game the other night, wasn't it?
Yeah, I played like two more games last night. It's interesting. You like get dropped out of an airplane onto a map that's constantly shrinking. And kind of scavenge for guns and stuff like that. And then you kind of got to strategically, you know, go from point A to point B, trying to stay alive or get the jump on the enemy. It's cool. It's basically Battle Royale on a huge scale. I have a few, you know, not problems with it, because they're things that they could... The things that are expected for something that's in early access or in beta, like the menu being garbage.
Yeah, you have to reload it.
It has its own built-in fucking refresh button. I've never seen that before in a video game, where there's a button, there's a fucking part of the UI there that you can click on to refresh the main menu. It's really bizarre. It doesn't work either, because there was numerous times where I was loading up the game and none of the interface would come up. It would just be the background of like that church with a gun laying up against one of the pillars. And you would sit there, and I'd be sitting and waiting, thinking that the menu is going to come up, and nothing happens. And you click the little refresh thing in the upper right, because that'll load, but you can't. You click on it, it does nothing. It blinks and nothing changes. So I had to restart the game probably three or four times to get it to finally like load all that stuff in the menu. And then there's the game. You know what it is? It's just the game's not finished. That's what it is. And its popularity has exploded.
You're popping bad.
Over a really short amount of time. So I think it's because I think there's going to be problems with it down the line, because they're already trying way too hard to appeal to esports with it, and it's
a really entertaining game
that's not acceptable. Yeah, I'm not taking anything away from that. I'm talking about what I see the direction it's going already.
I mean, for esports, like as an observer.
I honestly think that it's not a... I don't think there's enough happening to make it interesting if you're watching it from a outsider's perspective. Because I would watch... When we were at that LAN party like a month ago, I was watching several of you guys play it, and it's like... It's a lot of running. It's kind of like a running simulator with firefights in between. And... But what makes it interesting, though, or what sets it apart, is the fact that you're pit against, well, number one, because how many people are in there. I don't think there's any game you can play right now that's got 100 people in it. And then also, it's very, you know, there's a lot more on the line than there would be in other games, because you die and that's it. There's no respawning. And if you die early on, it sucks. So, but they have a lot of work to do. The engine, it's not optimized, and a lot of the, I don't know if you noticed, because you run everything like probably on super ultra low.
Everything's on
lowest. I was running stuff on high, and like when you first load in on the carrier, the plane that drops you off. The sky, it's like completely, it looks like a really bad texture, like a late 90s N64 game texture of the sky stretched across, and it's all pixelated. And then there's like this like dark border that goes underneath it. It's just like a straight line that cuts off to like darkness underneath it. and it's clearly a bug, or it's clearly like some unfinished texture, but it's just like, I think that, like, as a first impression when I first loaded up the game, I'm like, you know, I and like I said, it is early access and it is in beta, but I think they're trying to push the esports thing prematurely. I think they have to fix the, you know, where it's rough around the edges first before they really try and market this thing. Because that, if you're watching that as a spectator, you know, and you're, it just looks janky like that, and then the performance issues aside, it just doesn't look that good for an Unreal 4 engine game. You know, the lighting's really good. The lighting's probably the best thing about it. That makes everything look kind of realistic. But if you really look at the textures and, like, the poly count, it's just not... I don't know. There's better-looking games I can play on my PlayStation 4. I know they probably will run worse or just about the same, but I wasn't really that impressed with that either. But I got it for $20. I totally think it's worth $20 based on the gameplay alone and the replayability. What do you think about it? I know you're more enamored with it than I am, but like, if you were to be 100% objective, do you agree with all of what I just said?
I don't care about any of those things. The thing that bothers me,
well, I'm not asking if you care, I'm just,
the thing that bothers me is how long it takes before I get into a firefight and I die so fast. I don't know if maybe it's because my computer's 10 years old and it can't run it, even on the lowest settings. Maybe there's like some stuttering or something that I'm getting. The learning curve for me to get good at shooting and taking somebody down or telling whether or not I'm actually doing any damage to them seems really high. Like, I can't figure out whether I'm taking
them out. The shooting mechanics aren't good.
Yeah, they're weird. Yeah,
the shooting mechanics aren't good. They're not good. And that's probably the other criticism I would have made, but I haven't played it enough to really have, I think, a totally valid opinion on that. But yeah, in my experience, when I, like, because I got into like two firefights, both of them I died. And the first one, I had a pistol. And that's the other thing, too.
Popping.
There's
so
a lot of luck involved. Sorry, I keep... Hold on just a second.
Tilt your head away. You can lean in.
I'm moving my mic really far away because I'm shifting. Okay. Is that better? Can you still hear me well?
Yeah, we'll see.
Or is it too far?
I still hear you. We'll see.
Okay. That's the other thing is that it's totally like luck based too, because wherever you choose to drop out of the plane on whatever marker, wherever it is, whoever puts it there, there's no guarantee that the houses that you're going to land by, or the buildings you're going to land by, are going to have any good weapons. Like, there was a match where I didn't find any guns until like almost 10 minutes in. So you're already at a disadvantage if someone's coming in, closing in on you with guns, and, you know, because the enemy could land right by you out of the plane. They could drop, you know, probably within a couple hundred feet of you. And so they see where you're landing. They know you're there. And if they get a gun before you do, you're screwed.
Yes.
And that's
Battle Royale.
Kind of one of the other problems with it. Well, yeah. But it's just... Those are the things that I think make it, it's like Hunger Games, you know?
That's very much so, yeah.
It's like Hunger Games.
Which was stolen from Battle Royale.
And you gotta find your guns, yeah. Or find your weapons, whatever your weapon preference is. And, yeah, for its genre, it's definitely the best game in its genre. But if I were to compare it to other shooters, I think there's a lot of areas where it's lacking. At least in terms of polish and overall gameplay.
Considering it was a mod, and the guy has been able to, I assume, hire people to get this thing working, and that it's in such a state that the game's totally playable. It did crash on me 3 times last night. And then there's the weird visual bugs where there's like some weird disconnect between the GUI and it connecting, so you can like reload the whole interface so that it reconnects. It's weird that it's even connected that way, but whatever.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that they got this thing off the ground and turned it into a product from a mod. I think they'll get acquired. But every time I see the words blue hole with the circle, I keep reading butthole. The next time you launch PUBG, you're going to look at that and you're going to think the words butthole.
I thought of Arrested Development, where I blew myself.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm drinking some coffee from Panama.
Like blue hole could be like a play on words.
It sounds like a euphemism.
Yeah, euphemism. There you go. That sounds good. I'm drinking... I've got what's left of this Heineken I'm finishing, and then I've got a little bit of Angry Orchard. No, it's a good game. It's just it needs a lot of TLC to get like to where I think it needs a lot of work to get it to where it's acceptable for it to be considered an esport. Because if you look at the competition, all those other esport games, they're not buggy, they don't crash. They don't have texture and other graphical issues.
Money will solve all that. If they really made
$150 million in 5 months.
If they really did, they can hire really good people to rebuild parts of the game, and they shouldn't have a problem.
We don't know what this guy's mission objective is. We don't even know if he's totally committed in making the best game possible. He just may be in it for the money. And he's kind of already demonstrated that by shoehorning in the microtransactions when he said he wasn't going to do it.
You're an idiot if you're going to say no to in-app purchases. Doesn't whatever you want to call it, microtransactions, whatever. No, but
it's
whatever. Not
that he lied about it. That's the thing. He said he that changed they weren't going to do that until after early access was over. Well, then don't tell your customers when they're buying the game as a reassurance that that's the case.
He shouldn't.
That's false advertising.
Yeah, it's kind of a bait and switch. They shouldn't have done anything like that. Because they couldn't have had the foresight to think, oh, well, we need recurring revenue because these sales aren't going to keep going up forever. At some point, they're going to saturate the market and there won't be new customers.
Well, that's fine. Introduce that stuff after your game is fixed. Use the funds to fix the game. They haven't really been... I mean, the game has essentially been in the same state since it came out 5 months ago. It looks the same. It runs the same. It's not optimized. I just have a feeling it's going to end up being like Ark. You remember the game Ark? That was like the first Unreal 4 engine game.
It's nothing like Ark. Ark? Well,
the first one that was like... No, but I'm trying to explain that Ark is totally unoptimized. It runs like shit. And it's been out for 3-4 years almost now.
Yeah, those guys never made any money.
2014 or 2015. No, they made money. They made an expansion, too, and they violated the same agreement that that these guys made. And they said that, oh, well, we're doing it to fund further development or whatever. And then, lo and behold, here you are 3-4 years later, and the game is still totally unoptimized, still runs like shit. And so that's why I think it's going to happen with this game. I think it's you're going to keep needing to get better hardware to make it run better, but it's never going to run the way it should.
Yeah.
And... It's Unreal Engine. That's the other problem. Unreal Engine is not scalable, and at least the new one's not. Unreal 4. It's super resource heavy. But
we'll you want to hear about
Quake is live on Quake's.
Well, tell me about Quake then.
Well, I was going to say Quake's on Steam now. You can buy it. Well, it's going to be free to play in the fall, but you can get into it now by buying the champion pack where you get all the heroes and then you get, or champions, whatever they're called, and then you get all the future ones that come out too. And some of them have little abilities and stuff, like the new
that pisses me off.
The Doom Slayer. Well, there's trade-offs though. So like you'll have a really fast character, but they have less health, you know, or a really slow character that has more health.
That doesn't sound like
they
Quake.
Have like the middle of the pack guys. It doesn't because they have customization, or it's not customization. It's they have just that single loadout ability, but the gameplay itself is very much like Quake. It's very fast paced. It feels like Quake, but they changed some of the guns. The guns are, lightning gun is extremely overpowered right now. I think they just increased the splash on the rocket launcher, so it's better than it was. But I always go for the rocket launcher in Quake and Unreal Tournament.
You know how to solve your popping problem? Run your audio through your damn audio interface so you can tell when you're popping. So you can hear yourself.
Which audio interface are you talking about, though?
The Behringer. The one that your mic goes in so that it has real-time feedback.
If I plug my headphones into that, I could get my audio out through it.
You could? Is that what you said? Or couldn't?
I just think that to be honest with you, though, given all of the other noise and stuff that's in the background when we're recording and, like, the packet loss and things like that, when I've listened to the podcast, it's never bothered me that much. I know it's an issue, but I don't think it's as bad as you make it out to be when
I'm recording. It's an unsubscribe problem. If somebody's popping because they have a shitty mic, or they can't filter it, or they can't listen to whether or not they're popping every pee, because every other word out of your mouth is popping or clipping, and then it ducks your audio so that I can't hear you. I just unsubscribe
sure
from
popping,
those podcasts.
Though, or like if I do,
it's definitely
okay,
popping.
Here's a, like, I'll go. That's a pop.
Yeah. That's pop. Yeah, too, yeah, right? Yeah. You're popping. You're really quiet now.
I'm doing that like 2 inches away from the mic. So if I sit where I'm at here, do you hear that?
You're making a noise. You're not blowing wind into your mic. Your mic has, it's like a very sheer dress. The wind just flows right through that fucking useless pop filter.
Okay, well, I could probably rectify, but I think there's other audio issues that we've had with this show that aren't easily rectified that are worse. That's all I'm saying.
Anyway,
but
the new MacBook, probably the perfect laptop for me. It's for my only computer. It's inadequate, but to get work done, it's the perfect laptop for me, because I just need a nice high speed, fast, all day long, portable, terminal, Unix terminal with Git and some other tools, so I can administrate servers, commit code, solve people's problems. And I can just roam around. And it lasts an entire business day and then some. I was on it for 10 and a half hours today.
The lightness is really nice. I bet you like that keyboard better too, don't you?
That keyboard is... There's a lot of things to hate about the new keyboards because they're so damn shallow. But for what it is, because there's no avoiding it, you're never going to buy another Apple laptop that has a long keystroke again. For what it is, it's really, really solid.
It feels extremely tactile. That's what I like about it. Like, you hit those, I know they don't have a lot of travel, but when you hit those keys, you feel them kind of like,
yeah, they
it's
pop.
Like your finger slams down on them, and it's very like responsive. And I like the surface area too. I think, aren't they slightly wider than the old keys were?
Yeah, they come close to touching. So the chiclet style ones were more of like a little island, and these ones are kind of like spread out. They're broader so that the edges nearly touch everywhere. And when you touch the edges...
Well, with those scissor switches...
Yeah, what you were going to say.
Good. The scissor switches prevent it, so when you touch the edges, they don't wobble and go in sideways like the old keys did.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by solid. It's
They go down uniform.
Everything is super squared away, and the complete absence of ports is kind of a thing I like on this laptop because it forces me to be mobile or to be wireless. Oh, the other nice thing about having a tiny laptop is I can set it on almost any surface and there's always room for it. When I use my 15 inch, I always have to like clear away room and I awkwardly hold it with one arm because it's considerably heavier. This thing's only 2 pounds.
Yeah, that's super light. That's crazy. Because isn't the iPhone, the Plus, about 1 pound? Or no, it's like... was it like three quarters of a pound?
An iPad's 1 pound. I don't know how much the iPhone is. It's possible that it's that much because of how dense it is.
That's bothering me. I gotta look that up now.
That sounds pretty high, but my 7 Plus is pretty dense. It's got a surprising amount of weight to it. The MacBook, it's really, 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 really thin. How much does it weigh?
It's 6.63 ounces, so... How many? It's 12 ounces in a pound, or...?
Who the fuck knows?
16 ounces in a pound. Okay, so yeah, never mind. It's about a third.
Sometimes I put
a laptop... That seems really light, though.
What, 2 pounds or the iPhone?
No, the iPhone seems really light. Because I've held the Plus, and it feels significantly heavier than my regular 7 does.
It's just dense. So that weight for this size is probably, like you said, surprisingly heavy. 2 pounds for the size of a 12-inch MacBook is surprisingly light.
Yeah, that's with all that metal too.
When you rest it on your chest, like if you lay in bed, the edges, they're kind of sharp and they're really, really thin to the point where I'm actually concerned like resting my wrists on it. It's an unfounded concern, but I feel like I'm going to bend it or break it somehow because I don't totally trust
AppleCare.
Yeah, I've got AppleCare. I don't totally trust it because it's so deceptively thin.
AppleCare covers accidental damage now, too.
10.5 hours. I was compiling code. A little bit. Not that much. Installing something like Xcode uses a ton of resources. Did that a couple of times. I was just trying to give it a new install, but also
what are you doing in Xcode?
Work it. I need the components of Xcode to compile stuff when I use Brew. Because Brew builds things from source. Oh yeah, we didn't talk about that rumor.
What's the max memory on those 8 gigs, right?
16.
Oh, so they do 16, and that was cool.
Yeah.
So that was probably a pretty pricey MacBook then. That one, what's the drive in it?
512. Which is the most that they give you.
It's probably about $1,500, $1,600 for that.
Spot on. I mean, give or take $100.
Yeah, because the Pro... Because I think if you max out an Air, or not an Air, a MacBook... The new MacBooks, I think it's close to the same price as the cheapest 13-inch Pro. MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, there's possibly some overlap there. But the pricing's pretty close.
Yeah, maybe by like $100. Yeah.
But since the TDP of this chip is like 15 watts, even if I hammer the chip...
That's insane.
It's really low. Even if I hammer the chip, it doesn't kill the battery and bring it down to 2 hours. Like a MacBook Pro, a 15 inch at least, will pull 45 watts on the CPU alone. So that means I go from a 7 hour battery life at my on a good day to, or 8 hours, whatever it is that they say. The wishful number. I go down to 2.5 to 3 hours if I play a game. On this MacBook, I think the worst I could get is like 6 hours or 7 hours.
Just try and see if you can install like a DOI or Insurgency on that and run it. I bet you it can at max settings. Or maybe high.
When I was compiling stuff, the CPU was so hot, it was uncomfortable to touch. And it was in a very specific spot, so you could tell exactly where it was. Because there's no fans on this computer. It's just solid metal. There aren't even vents, from what I can tell. Maybe the keyboard, that's the vent. But there's no gaps in the keys. So eventually the whole case would become saturated with heat if you were using 2 cores, 4 threads, maxed out. Basically, I don't want to do that to the computer. Because of my MacBook Pro, I have a fear of heat in laptops. It seems to shorten their lives and wear out the sensors. Because the last thing I want is this very nice MacBook becoming like my 12-inch ThinkPad. That ThinkPad had one of the original ultra-low voltage chips from Intel. The Core 2, what do they call those things? I guess it was a Core 2 Duo ultra low voltage. And it was the chip that was also in the original MacBook, the one that could fit inside a manila envelope that didn't have any visible ports on the outside. The really, really thin one.
Okay. Yeah.
It would underclock to about half its normal speed and like shut down cores. So it would run at like 1/4 of its actual speed because it was always too hot. It could never cool itself properly. So my ThinkPad became useless. And I actually run it and I sit it up like on its screen. So that's like a teepee. It just kind of rests with it open and I actively cool it externally. And I run a couple services on that thing. And the only thing that's plugged in is the power and Ethernet. The ThinkPad can't be used.
Just take your old MacBook Pro and turn that into a Mac OS X server.
Well, I need my Pro. That's how I do the show. That's how I play games. That's how I do everything else and get some work done.
Okay.
I'm not ready to get rid of it.
I've been interested in Mac OS X server. I've kind of wanted to see how it works. Because they used to have the, was it Xserve back in the day?
Yeah. That was way back. That was like 10 years ago now.
And I never worked with any of that stuff, so I never got to see how the management was.
It's literally
what
their
just version of Active Directory was
a GUI. It's just an app in the App Store at this point. You pay $20, and any computer is running OS X server.
It had like domain services and stuff like that, right? For like or an equivalent to that of that from what's
something
in Windows
like
Server.
That. It had whatever Microsoft ripped off.
Well,
they
ripped it off.
That was a service Novell and IBM provided.
Novell and who was the other? There was another company that did it.
But it's such an old model of doing things. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, but it's the only way to do it though for in work environments where you want control over everything. That's the only way to do it. It's funny that it shows you how little Apple is invested in that, because they probably would have had some sort of cloud platform with iCloud, like something equivalent to Azure, because that, if you think about it, that would be the best way to do it. Screw running a machine with OS X server that you got to pay, was it $150 for on the App Store for that?
No, it's $20.
Like,
bucks.
Screw that. You can just...
$20.
I thought it was over $100.
It's $20.
Okay, well...
Since it's been in the App Store, it's $100. Or $20. It's like $19.99 or something.
Well, the point I was getting at is, like, one of the dilemmas we have is, like, we manage a lot of client iPhones for a company, and Apple has no way for you to register all of those iPhones with a master account that has delegation, meaning you can't, there's no way to control all of those accounts from one master account. You can't tie iCloud and Apple IDs to other Apple account, your iCloud and Apple IDs. They're all separate. So Apple should come out with like some iCloud management where you can do it like on an enterprise level, where all your employees have iPhone, company issued iPhones and MacBooks and whatever, where you know how you have like the management for tying devices to your Apple ID, just make that so that you could have one master account for all of those devices, just a company account with an administrator, you know, Apple ID to authorize and deauthorize all that stuff. Because it's
have you heard
the problem
of the-
is go ahead.
Everything that you're going to say after this is...
They have third-party things to do it, I know. There's other...
Have you heard of the Apple Configurator? There's two versions. There's the old one and the new one. Version 1 and version 2.
That's like what Apple uses in their stores, I thought, on like iPads and stuff like that, to like manage customers.
That is the tool for enterprise... management, and then any of the services are managed on OS X server or anything else that uses.
Okay, so tell me how,
like Active Directory.
But how it's do you manage? Okay, with that configurator though, how do you manage? Because if you've got multiple Apple IDs tied to a single, because you have like, they have like family sharing and all that stuff, you know, so you can do, you can share documents and stuff like that, you know, through, you know, whatever, however that's set up. But what I'm saying is like, if I'm an IT company, like what they could, I guess they could expand on something like that. But if I'm an IT company and let's say there's 20 employees at this company and they've all got company issued iPhones, even if we used the same login on all those devices, we have no way of cutting off a specific device from access to stuff. So, like, we can't disable the service on that device. You can't remote wipe that device. You can't.
Yeah, you
like,
can.
There's no tools.
Yes. Every service out there that provides any type of business email, whether it's Google Apps or the Microsoft's system, has the ability to remote wipe the mail from the device, change the device's password policy so that it's forced to basically any phone that has signed in with Active Directory as the email option, the service provider, the business...
Active mean Exchange, not Active Directory.
Yes, Exchange.
Well, that's different though. That's not what I'm talking about. Exchange is,
and then remote wiping
that's managed externally.
Let me just finish the fucking thing because you're completely wrong.
Okay.
The Apple Configurator and OS X server. End of story. There's a specific way
OS
to do
server.
This. Yeah, OS X server.
Yeah,
and
OS X
Apple
server. So
Configurator.
Yeah, you're not. You're missing the point that I'm trying to make. I'm saying that Apple should have some sort of cloud-based solution to that, where I can manage everything from an interface online, like I can do with Azure and Active Directory online. Like there's nothing like that Apple provides. So you've got to use OS X server, you know, configurator, the same stuff that they use in the Apple Store, all of that. I know that stuff existed, but there's no way that I can... Even with OS X server... Let's say someone's out in the middle of nowhere. Let's say they've got their iPhone and they live in like Montana, which is a really poor... They don't have Wi-Fi because they don't have internet out there, or they have some really spotty satellite internet and they have no LTE service. How do I make it so that that person's device can get wiped the second that they connect to the network or some sort of network?
Predator drone.
I was being serious though. Like, it's because
yeah.
This is a dilemma we have. Like,
you click remote wipe in Outlook, or whatever the thing's called, the Microsoft thing, and the next time it connects and it checks for email, it erases all the email from the device. If you want to remote wipe the device, yeah, you have to have an enterprise certificate on there through the Apple configurator, and then with OS X server where you manage all your phones, you hit remote wipe and the server stays open for the next time it sees it.
Okay.
The command is in a queue.
Well, like I said, I've never used OS. I've never used OS X server, so
it's all locked.
I mean, so you gotta have that. So that means if you're an IT, if you're
yes, you have to buy a Mac.
Service provider, you have to have a fucking OS X machine running in your office.
Yes.
Think about how stupid that is.
That is very stupid because fuck you. That's why they don't care. If you want to develop for the iPhone, you have to buy a Mac. It's a completely closed ecosystem. It's all proprietary.
That I understand. But they need to expand on iCloud. They need to really invest more in their web services, because for the being the fucking world's richest company, they sorely lack in that area. Just look at Siri. I mean, Siri's junk compared to Alexa and Hey Google. So that doesn't really instill a lot of confidence in their ability to manage stuff that's critical, you know, like permissions and things like that, and remote wiping devices and whatnot.
Yeah, you got to run one of their servers or pay for a service where they'll run the server for you. Otherwise, the closest thing to a cloud ability to remote wipe would be iCloud.com, but that is a per user thing.
Yeah. Yeah, screw that. Yeah, because we just had like another client terminated, or the employee left or whatever, and they had a company issued phone. So they just left. What do we do about that?
If they didn't have an enterprise certificate,
all we can do is
out.
Restrict their access. All we can do is cut off their access to email. That's literally all we can do. And we can change the password of the Apple ID that was set up on that phone. But everything else...
What, you set up an Apple ID on there?
Well, you have to, because then how do you track the phone? They lose their phones.
Use the iCloud account.
To that company. They lose...
You set up an Apple ID on it. Just remote wipe it from there.
No, yeah, but you can't... If they're not accessible, if they take that device off Wi-Fi or off, we need ability to do it like immediately on the fly, like just where.
So you want the ability to remote wipe something that's not on the internet?
No. I'm saying if they've already gone, like if a client notifies us that an employee left at 4 o'clock and they'd let us know at 5, that's an hour of time that has gone by. We don't know. We have no way to know, like, until they notify us. Obviously, if the employee was getting terminated, they'd have to let us know anyway, but we could do it at the flip of a switch, as opposed to this, okay, we got to look at a password database, see which password we assigned for this Apple ID, log into whatever the Apple ID site is, and then do it that way. And I don't actually think there's a way... I've never actually seen a way where you can do a remote wipe just by signing into the Apple ID through the Apple ID site. Maybe I just haven't tried that.
By my iPhone. But what you want is an enterprise certificate on the device through the Apple configurator. There's all kinds of tutorials on how to do it. And you can...
You can
remote wipe everybody.
I was just going to ask. So you can initiate a remote wipe. Let's say that device doesn't ping on Find My Mac or Find My iPhone or whatever. Can you still schedule a remote wipe the second that comes back online?
Yeah,
and it goes into a queue as soon as okay.
So the moment it hits the network, the moment it's on a network and it can phone home, it will receive the message and destroy itself. But you'll never find the phone because it's now completely gone.
But that
you could lock it and then keep it online.
Well, what if they plug it into a computer running iTunes and they do the recovery where it just completely wipes it from there?
You can restrict whether or not it can allow other devices to be trusted. You can control everything through the Apple configurator. You can pick the type of algorithm you want for your VPN. You can say this device cannot connect to any open Wi-Fi. You can do anything you
can
think
of. Well, maybe we need to tell that customer then to give us money to host a run a OS X server with that then.
Yeah, you could lease a VPS through one of those providers out there that run a bunch of Apple products. They've got like fleets of Mac Minis or something. And then you can charge a recurring fee for that. That's what you want after all. Especially if you can over-provision the number of customers on there. Because the server's not doing anything. If you could host lots on there, you could put every customer in there.
Unless it's handling storage, unless it's doing, you know, running different services and things like that. Does Apple have anything equivalent to Microsoft Nav or
I don't know what
like
that
Nav
is.
Nav Dynamics, anything like that?
Never heard
it's
of it.
It's like GPS. It's not GPS. It's geographic. It's like for shipping and stuff like that, tracking shipping and managing shipments and managing distribution networks.
No, they don't deal with business customers besides Apple Business, which just coordinates buying and selling stuff. IBM handles anything enterprise related for Apple. So their contractors show up with iPads, take all the notes that they need, build out a fleet of iPhones or whatever with their IBM business contract, and then they'll have like next day shipping, anything that IBM would have done with their PCs back in the day, or maybe Microsoft does, I don't know. IBM does it all. Oh yeah, and the App Store thing.
What else?
You can restrict what can be downloaded through the App Store and buy bulk licenses for businesses. So that solves your other problem. Everything you want, that's how it's done. It may not be the exact way you want it done.
There's always ways around that, though. You can you can jailbreak a phone. You can make it so that all that stuff gets circumvented to a certain extent. You got to know what you're doing, though.
You can't bypass any of it if you've got a certificate on your phone and you don't know the password. A jailbreak would be one way, assuming that there's an exploit for that OS and the phone hasn't been updated. But most of the time, the jailbreaks are exploiting some type of vulnerability. They're wedging their way in and then wiping the OS, in which case the phone would be knocked offline and disconnected from all the services, which would hopefully set off one of your alerts. But without the password to that enterprise certificate, the user really has no way to bypass it, because you can lock down whether or not they can even change their password. And you can do that really annoying thing that you have to do with all of Microsoft's email services, where it resets the password every X amount of days.
I don't enable that.
Yeah, it's pointless.
You can set a password policy in anything. Outlook Online or the O365 admin or Exchange on a Windows server.
Did you see this story about a guy who wanted to see what the limits of Amazon's S3 service was? He uploaded 2 petabytes or 1.8 petabytes of porn. I think it was a Reddit thread that uploaded
all of it. Is it like all the porn on the internet?
It must be. 23 years of HD TV video.
Wow.
A hundred and two years of video.
if it's compressed to 480p, it's 293 years.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know why they cut him off though. I couldn't figure that out reading the headline of the story. But that must have filled like a whole data center. I don't know who the hell's paying for that.
Our tax dollars, probably. They probably get some money kicked back from the CIA for hosting all their shit.
I'm talking about Beeston. Beeston 02. How is this guy paying for it?
Oh, to pay for all that?
Well, this is a Vice story. Yeah. This is bullshit. I'm sure it happened, but it's a Vice story, so it's...
it's embellished.
It's... what's this? What's the deal with the New York Times? They're run by their sources, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Vice, probably run by their sources.
Probably the guy that was one of the founder or creators of it, Gavin McInnes. He's like an alt-right guy. He said something negative about them.
Wait, Gavin McInnes, the guy who did How Do You Piss in Public, the YouTube video? He has a...
Yeah, he's the Vice co-founder.
Oh, yeah, he is. He did this YouTube video where he was holding a magazine around his dick, and he's in public in New York, and he's pretending to talk on his phone, and he's pissing out the side, just like pissing against the wall as he walks. He's a very skilled pissologist.
He's the founder of the Proud Boys, a far-right men's organization.
Who wrote that?
It's a pro-Western fraternal organization.
He's been on Joe Rogan a couple of times.
Fraternal Order of Alt Knights. Yeah.
Alt Knights?
He was born in England.
Is he trolling people?
He's Canadian, but he was born in England. He's Canadian, but he was born in England and he lives in the US.
And he has a nice curly mustache.
Yeah. He looks like a disenfranchised hipster. With that, because he looks like he's pissed off all the time.
I bet he smells like whatever he last ate. Just sticks in that mustache.
That's funny.
All right, give me some sound effects to play on our way out.
The South Park, you're a fag. Do you have that?
I don't have it ready, but I'll look it up. Ooh. There's a new place boring thing.
I have a song you could play out, but it's probably copyrighted.
Oh, man. I need to remove those old episodes where we played, like, those full songs.
Yeah.
We've
never gotten any money, though, so they can't go... they couldn't go after us.
Basically no money. Bringyourwallet.com/donate. South Park?
I think it's the Guitar Hero. You guys are fags. Congrats.
I think this is it.
Hey, my name's Gary.
Hi, my name's Yura. Yura, fag.
No.
Funny. You're cool, man.
I haven't heard that one. My name's Yura. You're a fag.
When you type that into YouTube, it doesn't auto-complete it. It censors it.
That's funny. Yeah, fuck you too.
Dragon Wind to Faggot. Come in, Faggot.
This is Faggot. Go ahead.
Faggot, I need you to keep surveillance north northeast. Check back in 5.
Okay, will do. Faggot out.
Bringyourwallet.com/contact for feedback and suggestions. Bringyourwallet.com/donate to share the show and support the show. Let's own some noobs and PUBG.
Sayonara.
Bye.
It was the second presidential debate, and Donald Trump was groping women behind me. He followed me closely, making faces. I turn, look him in the eye, and say loudly and clearly, "Well, I know you love groping women, so grope me." He was literally staring at me. I did, however, grip his dick extra hard, biting.